Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 139, coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling. Thanks for joining us here on the Watchdog Network, getting you ready for an action-packed weekend of sports as we near the beginning of college football and the NFL season. They are right around the corner. You got preseason games going on. You got training camp practices. You got college training camp practices going on. Lots of things happening out there in the world of sports and sports betting for that matter. So thanks for joining us on the ride here with another action-packed episode of Better's Last Stand. We have plenty to talk about. We'll recap last week's action as we always do to begin the show. And then we'll start talking about what we like for this weekend, whether there's going to be a basketball game you like, or golf, or racing, or football of all different shapes and sizes. We got it covered right here on Better's Last Stand. So thanks again for joining us here on the Watchdog Network and the Pine Room Studios YouTube page and wherever you listen to your podcast, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, on and on and on. The list goes, and we will be there here on Better's Last Stand. Show number 139, already halfway through August. Hard to believe. Seems like we just got back from vacation and we're already on the precipice of NFL and college football season. Week zero next week in college football. That is just nuts to me. And it's on us quickly. So we've given out tons of picks leading up, lots of things early on that I had to actually go back and remember that I had given out. BLS underscore PRP, go back. You can see them all on there. We list them out after every show and before a lot of times these shows are even released. So get on there if you want time-sensitive material. Beat everybody else to the punch, BLS underscore PRP. We were really good in the NFL and futures last year, so we're going to give you some futures in the AFC and NFC East as well as the Big Ten Conference, our final of the Big Four conferences that we broke down here on the show. And it's a conference that hits close to home. We got Ohio State. Everybody loves Ohio State around this area. We either do or you don't, I guess. But we'll talk about the Buckeyes and some of the other teams that are going to be a force to be reckoned with. Oh, put it in. I got PSG and Tottenham Hotspurs a goal. Maybe. Don't be offsides. No, that can't be offsides. Oh. I have both teams to score here in the UEFA Super Cup, which is the winner of the Champions League against the winner of the UEFA Europa League. Oh, this guy's like 9 miles offside. What in the world? But PSG trails 2-0 to Tottenham Hotspur here early on. Tottenham Hotspur, the new manager, PSG running their goalkeeper out, which is just insane to me after they win the Champions League and look very good all year long. Don't get it. But plenty of soccer talk coming up here. Not on this show so much, but I really neglected the EPL audience here today. I did not go through my EPL picks. I didn't have time. I had to cut something off as I prepared yesterday, and I did not have time to go through. And plus, it's a little bit tough to play these games early on. I might do what I did in some of the lower leagues and just play both teams to score and overs in those games. But I will have picks up at BLS underscore PRP. We're just not going to talk about them on the show today. But that's okay for some of you, I'm sure, that probably just want me to skip right to the American football part of the program. But let's recap last week for those of you who may have missed it. We were up only about 2.5 units, 2.45 to be exact. So not a very good week for us. Not terrible, but just can never really catch fire in any capacity in several different areas. And we'll recap those now. Golf, once again, golf just continues to be frustrating. And I actually got some in play on Justin Rose there, but wasn't going to do anybody good to listen to this show. So about it, you can get him at 100-1 the pre-tournament. And Rosie's had a pretty good year. He's a good player. And when it comes down to when his putter gets hot like it did on the back nine the other day, he can win some tournaments. So he gets the job done. You could have found him around 100-1 at some spot. So nice win for him in a playoff over J.J. Spawn. Tommy Fleetwood once again fades. And Scottie Scheffler, without his caddy, didn't look all that great. He looked okay. He looked just average, but sad days for Tommy Fleetwood, who blows it once more. Matsuyama and Sung J.M. cash force, but nothing spectacular. We were negative in the golf, almost 2 units to the negative there. Another winning week in the AFL, though, 10-7. Boy, we started out really good. 6-0, I want to say we were on maybe Saturday. Maybe it was Friday. So one of the 2 days we were 6-0. I was like, man, we're going to have a massive week, and then gave some back a few tough beats, not necessarily bad beats, but just bad situations where guys got hurt and some way the game was played changed, and a couple of totals that didn't get there for us. But that's all right. 10-7 on the week, still a winning week. 126-91, 59%, so almost 60% since early May. I guess you always take that if you're a handicapper. CFL 3-4. Well, we improved by a game. We were 3-5 the last 2 weeks. Now we're 3-4. So can't seem to get any momentum in that. I've had a few of these games completely pegged wrong. There was an under the other day. I think it was into the 80s that we had. So not pretty. NASCAR, again, just can't seem. I got to go back and look how many times we've had the second place driver, because it continues again. We have Chris Bell, our top pick last week. He finishes second, and really he had the car. Shane Van Gisbergen, a pit strategy type win, similar to what Chris Buescher did last year, made his stop at the right time and was able to gap the rest of the field and come in to make his final stop with enough time to cover himself and come back out in the lead. It was a really well done job by him and his crew, and he wins for the third time here on a road or street course. So he gets the job done there. We had Chris Bell second, Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez cash in for us as well. Suarez at a nice price, but it's not good enough. We got to be better than that. We did do good in IndyCar, though. Will Power comes through with a nice win in IndyCar. We also had Scott McLaughlin, and then Scott Dixon was not a winner, which is weird because usually he's about the most steady guy there is. But Will Power cashes at Portland at 7-1, which kept us above sea level for the week. Big Three basketball. So it was only a matter of time before we had a comeback to the field type day for Big Three basketball. So we were 3-5 last week. A couple of games did not go our way. I thought we had a good chance of being 5-3, but just didn't swing our way. So nonetheless, it was a 3-5 performance, and we now go to 26-13 on the season so far. Again, pretty good. 66%. I think we'll take that at this point. So Big Three basketball coming through. Soccer, a little bit of a cold start there. 6-8 in England. Had some teams that did not get there with some teams who probably should have been a sizable favorites on paper, which we try to, you know, find you better prices and not play serious favorites. Leicester City disappointed until the second half, although an early goal by Sheffield Wednesday kept them above sea level in that match. We did get the over in that one, and we had what other game? Oh, the Liverpool game, both teams to score and over in that one. So we had a few decent ones, but not good enough. West Bromwich and a few other teams that come through. Wrexham, the fate of Wrexham, was off to a good start. They lost 2-1 after blowing a one goal lead. So we'll continue to have the soccer plays here. I don't have anything for the show today, but I will add them. I've got to see who's going to make it out health wise on some of these team sheets too, because there's a lot of transition this time. You got a lot of new guys coming in. You got old guys who are have fallen out of favor. This isn't like NFL and NBA and Major League Baseball free agency. Like soccer, you're literally getting your roster together. The season's starting already, and some of these teams aren't even sure about who they're going to be, who their top 18 players are going to be, or top, you know, 25 type guys are going to actually be. So you got guys on their way out. You got guys who have fallen out of favor, who are waiting to get sold. You have a lot of things that are still going on in soccer. So you got to see who's going to be available first, who's meeting the fitness tests first. Got a lot of questions there. So we'll have them up. BLS_PRP is where you want to be. Major League Baseball, let's talk about that. Red Sox staying pretty hot right now, still playing pretty good baseball. Still think they, I don't know if they can track the Blue Jays down, but I know they're going to blow past the Yankees here at any point. Rangers, good night, bad night, good night, bad. They're playing better. They can't seem to hit, though. I still am worried about their bats. They're 3.5 out of the wild card right now. Not dead. You got Houston with some issues right now. Seattle playing good baseball. So there's lots to like still. I gave out that bet for the AL West last week. I still do like that quite a bit. The Reds now just 2 games out of the wild card. I think I said last week the Cubs and the Mets to me are a serious concern. Now the Cubs are treading water. The Mets are kind of a catastrophe. Pete Alonso hit a couple home runs last night to keep them afloat and get them a win. much needed win. But man, I don't know what's wrong with this Met team. Their starting pitching, I guess, is what it boils down. I guess I do know what's wrong. Their starting pitching is just not good enough. They can't go deep enough into games. It's blowing their bullpen out, and their offense is just not good enough to be able to sustain that. They have too many weak outs in that lineup, if you ask me. I've never liked Brandon Nimmo. I've never liked Jeff McNeil. They're singles hitters. They're Freddie Sanchez type hitters. They're singles. That's what they are. They don't get extra bases. I don't understand them building the lineup that they built. It's a weird lineup to me. They have three really good players. Pete Alonso and Lindor and Soto, I mean, are elite at all their positions. And they don't have the starting pitching, and the rest of their lineup construction is just very, very odd to me. So I thought it was an incredibly big waste of money to have Brandon Nimmo as the amount of money they gave him for a guy that can't hit. It's just weird. I don't know. It's not like you have designated player like in softball where you could just play the outfield and not have to hit. Maybe if you had that, maybe that would be okay. But he can't hit. He just can't pay a guy that much. He can't hit at all, and he sucks. But anyway, Mets not out of it yet, but they are kind of fizzling, fading, whatever you want to call it. Padres on fire right now, playing well. So we gave out some Padre futures last week. So I think the Padres matching up with the team out of the AL West could be a very, very distinct possibility. But we'll see. Rangers, Red Sox, not done yet. Reds playing pretty well. Although the Reds, I will say, disappointed me over the weekend. I thought they'd win at least three or four against the Pirates, if not all four. Lose the first two, then come back and win the second two. Their bullpen, tad bit iffy. They got a couple of back-end guys that are good, but if you start getting where you got to use a lot of those guys, those middle type guys, you could be in some big trouble if you're a Reds fan. So let's hope for the best there. I do think the Yankees are done. I think that team just stinks. It's a good thing they got to play the Twins, about the only team that they can beat. I think they're like 100 games over 500 against the Twins since like 2005. Over the last 20 years, they've just absolutely owned the Twins. The Twins are one of the biggest laughing stocks in sports. They really are. Now, they did win a championship in the early 90s, so I guess that kind of keeps people going, but they have not been relevant since then. And they had a great team back then, but they absolutely stink in every capacity. So I'm not a believer in the Yankees. Don't get excited because they sweep the Twins. That is for sure. I think the Yankees fade and fall out of this thing. Yankees to miss the playoffs, we gave out last 2 weeks ago at a pretty good price, and it was already down significantly, about $4 less than it was when we gave it out a couple of weeks ago. Golf. Actually, let's go to basketball next. Mystics, Valkyrie, Sparks fighting it out for that final playoff spot. I keep waiting for the Sparks to get that win to get me over the 15.5 hump. It was not good last night. The Fever, man, a bad loss for them against Dallas. And I will say, it's not getting talked about enough, and you're never going to hear it on ESPN because Paige Beckers fits, you know, some of the narratives on that network cares about, and she's getting all this hype. She gets a lot of calls, I tell you what, and she's not even a quarter of the player of Caitlin Clark's caliber, and she's really not even as good as the Sonia Citron. If you ever watch her, Mystics are not a big market team, so you're not going to see a whole lot of the Washington Mystics, but if you saw the game on Sunday, she used and abused Paige Beckers. Her team won the game. She's 2-0 against her, and her stats just dominate her in the one-on-one matchup. Citron is a really good player. I'm not saying Beckers isn't a good player. She's a very good player. Do I think she's an all-time great? Absolutely not even close. This Citron girl could be one of the future up-and-coming superstars in the league. Just a rookie, and she is just dominating right now. She is very, very good, and if you get a chance to watch the Mystics, watch her play, because she's actually should be the rookie of the year right now, but she won't be because ESPN has already handpicked Paige Beckers as the next person because they got to find somebody who can outshine Caitlin Clark, and they'll do whatever they can do to be sure that Caitlin Clark gets as much crap as possible and doesn't get the spotlight. So do I hate Paige Beckers? I didn't say that, but I am not a fan. I was never massively impressed with her at UConn. Again, she's not even in the top 15, 20 players that UConn's ever had. Ever good player, not great. But Citron should be the rookie of the year, but I'm pretty sure she will not be. That league is a mess in every way, shape, and form. But the Mystics playing a little bit better the last week. They got a shot at the playoffs. Valkyries, not as good, not as sharp. Sparks, back and forth. So fighting it out for that last playoff spot, it's going to be very interesting because the Aces have now corrected themselves and seem to be comfortably into the playoffs. Big 3 basketball, as we said last week, 3-5. 26-13 for the season. Got a couple plays here. They're in the semifinals, so there's only two games this week. It's the LA Riot and the Chicago Triplets. It'll be the Triplets -1.5, the total 96.5. These games at American Airlines Arena in Dallas, Texas. This is the Final Four. Next week will be the final. The two teams who win on Saturday will be in the final next week. The Riot won this game by 20 earlier in the season, but it's very early on. Chicago, a lot better. Montrezl Harrell coming into the team has been a massive lift after he got done playing in the TBT. This dude's going to be really tough to stop. Los Angeles got lucky last week. We played against him. We play against Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard's just, it's too predictable. He can't make free throws. He can't finish plays. He seems out of shape. But they just keep force-feeding in the ball. I know he's the face of the franchise, so I think it was important. They got some questionably good calls in that game to get them over the hump to make the playoffs. But I'm not a Riot guy. I think Chicago Triplets get the job done. -1.5, and we'll go under 96.5. I think the Triplets win this by about probably something like 50-43, something like that. I think that will be the final score. So we go with the Triplets in game number one. Game two is the Miami 305 and the Dallas Power. Miami -1.5 with Michael Beasley. 96.5 is the total. Dallas Power, coached by Nancy Lieberman. They got Glenn Rice Jr. They have Greg Monroe. And then TJ Klein, who's a perfectly prototypical type 3-on-3 player. Does a little bit of everything well and is kind of a glue guy for that team. And I like Dallas in this game. I think they're catching 1.5. I think they win the game outright. They won by 3 in the regular season against Miami. Beasley's been very good, though, I will say. He could be the MVP at this point. But we'll go with Glenn Rice, TJ Klein, and Nancy Lieberman leading the charge. And we go over 96.5, Dallas over Miami. All right, keeping it going here. Bettors Last Stand, show number 139 here on the Watchdog Network from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios, downtown Wheeling. Getting you ready for another weekend filled with sports action. Golf-wise, BMW Championship, golf winding down, and I'm actually very glad. Ever since LIV split this thing up, and I'm actually a LIV guy, I think the LIV Tour's better. I like a lot of the things they do much better than the PGA. PGA got stagnant and cocky, and it's just not a great product. You got runaway winners. Sometimes you'll get drama. You had drama last week, so I guess that's good, but courses are too easy. And I think the competition is watered down, although there's a lot of good players, so I guess that is one positive. Competition being watered down, meaning that you don't have the very best worldly players playing every week because there's too many events, and you can't play every week. But Scottie Scheffler, favorite here once again. He didn't play great last week. They last played at this tournament, or at this course, Caves Valley Golf Course in Owings Valley, Maryland, which is outside of Baltimore. They newly renovated this place, so I don't know how this is going to play. It's going to be a little bit different than last time when it was Patrick Cantlay and who did he play? Oh, I read this the other day who he played in the playoff, and I can't remember. Oh, Bryson DeChambeau, who's not on the tour anymore. They played in a playoff the last time. This was here. The BMW rotates around each year. So 2021 was when they last played here. They've reconfigured the course quite a bit. Scheffler, the 2.5-1 favorite. Rory McIlroy at 7-1, second choice. Then you got a big gap down to Xander Schauffele at around 18-1. Ludvig Auber at 21. I like Xander. I like Ludvig. I would consider playing these guys in the winter without. Keep Scheffler out of there. I think that could help you out a little bit. Sam Burns at 30-1 seems like a good play to me. He was 8th here in 2021 on this course. Again, I don't know. This course is going to be different. I read some of the things about it, some of the reconfigurations they did. I still think it's going to be benefit guys that hit it pretty far, and I don't see it being massively different. Victor Hovland was 17th here in 2021, 35-1. Keep waiting for him to catch fire, so we're going to try him again. Kirk Kitayama is getting play on everybody's model across all the betting landscape, so that's all I've heard all week is Kirk Kitayama. So I'm just passing that along. I'll play him just because there's guys that are a lot smarter than me that are playing him. So Kirk Kitayama, 40-1. Sungjae Im, the guy we continue to ride, he's 50-1. Played very well here, third in 2021. So he's had a good run in the BMW at different courses. So those are the guys we're going with, focusing on this week. Again, BLS_PRP, where you can get these ahead of the tournament. But you can always play them in play, too, and get much better prices on them. So just recapping who we're going to have. Xander Schauffele at 18-1, Ludvig Auber 20-1, Sam Burns 30-1, Victor Hovland 35-1, Kirk Kitayama 40-1, and Sung Jae Im at 50-1. Australian rules football. Let's go right into that now before we hit the racing, and then we get to the part of the show that everybody wants to hear about, the NFL and college football talk. Aussie rules football. We only got 2 weeks left before the finals, which are known as the playoffs. Top 8 teams make it in Friday and Saturday action. We got a fully loaded card as these teams fight it out for supremacy to see who's going to get in these final spots as PSG just can't seem to push one past Spurs here. And I really need this goal. I really need PSG to get one here in the last 7 minutes. That would be a very, very nice way to make the show even better. But back to the AFL round 22. You have teams fighting it out. You got GWS, Sydney Swans, and the Western Bulldogs kind of fighting it out for those last two spots. Right now, you got GWS hanging on to that eighth spot. You got Western in ninth with a legit chance. And you got Sydney, who's going to need a lot of help. Sydney's going to need the Gold Coast Suns to win, but that's very possible as they play GWS on Friday. And then they're going to need to beat the Geelong Catch, which is not going to be easy. And then the Western Bulldogs will play the West Coast Eagles, which they will easily win. So you got to count a win for Western in the column. That is an almost guarantee. Now, we do need GWS to win one of these matches. They have a makeup game coming up as well. The final week of the season, they will play Essendon. In an extra, it was going to be a bye week, but they're going to have to play Essendon to make up that game. It might matter, so we'll see how that transpires. But let's get to this week's card. St. Kilda and Essendon, the aforementioned Essendon Bombers, who can't wait for the season to be over with. St. Kilda comes in winners of three straight, playing okay right now. Four of the last five between these two have went under, and a goal for PSG. All right, cash and bets right here on Better's Last Stand with a nice winner there from PSG. Gets us both teams to score, and you still got about 5 minutes left in the game. So maybe there's a 2-2 draw coming here and some extra time. We shall see. So UEFA Super Cup, not disappointing here. All right, back to it. St. Kilda and Essendon. This is at Essendon. St. Kilda minus 27.5, total 169.5. Now that seems like a big number to lay with a team like St. Kilda. I'm going to lay it anyway. Essendon has been so, so bad. They've lost 10 in a row. And, I mean, they are about as listless as a team can be. Under 169.5 will go as well as Essendon. Just, I'm not sure they'll eclipse 50 here. So we'll go with the Saints to close it out, to kind of end their year on a high. They got one more match after this. But still, it'd be nice for them to get another win. And they've come on. They almost can get to 9 wins here. So that would be good for them. Brisbane Lions, we gave you Sydney Swans last week. We said it really wouldn't surprise us if maybe Sydney beat them outright. And they did, laying a big number there. Brisbane just can't seem to bring it every week. And they got some young players, and that's obviously a trait of young guys. Can you bring your A game multiple weeks in a row? I don't know. Now, when it comes playoff time, finals time, I think that they're going to be able to. They have too many veterans on that team. But I know some of the veterans talked about their effort was very poor in some of the losses that they've had. And I think that they are kind of biding their time, trying to stay healthy, and not maxing out every week to get ready to make their run. Now, they're getting dangerously close to messing around, though, and not getting to the top four, where they would be in a much better position. So they're in fifth right now. They take on Fremantle, the fourth-place team. Fremantle's won 5 straight, but really, they haven't beat anybody in that time. They're a 3.5-point favorite here, total 166.5. I like the Lions, Brisbane Lions. I think that they bounce back after a bad loss against the Swans. I think they crush Fremantle pretty good here. They are, to me, the best team. But I will say, I've been giving them out for several weeks now as the team that I think is the best all-around team, and their A game is the best that I've seen. But Geelong Cats have now closed in. Geelong was a team early in the season. Before their bye week, they were kind of sputtering. They had a lot of young players, too. So now these guys are starting to really start to get a taste of what the full season of AFL action is like. They're playing really, really well right now. So I think Geelong is the only other contender to win this thing, the grand final. I would say Geelong and Brisbane, if you could get the final match between those two teams. Brisbane actually knocked Geelong out of here last year in the semifinals. I think that'd be an incredible rematch. That was one of the better games you ever watch in sports last year, Brisbane and Geelong. So I'm very hopeful for that. But back to this week's action, Brisbane, I will take them plus 3.5. You don't get them at a plus price very often. I would play them on the money line as well. Last time they were a dog, they beat Collingwood handily outright. That game was an under game, but Collingwood is banged up. This game, I think, will be an over game. Fremantle will score a little bit, but Brisbane will score more. So we get Lions and over. GWS in a big, big game against Gold Coast. Now, Gold Coast is the favorite here, 15.5 points at home, 177.5. is the total. GWS needs this game really badly, but Gold Coast needs it too. They're positioning, and if they mess around here, they could find themselves if things broke correctly, they might fall out of here. I don't think they can lose next week, but you never know. You don't want to leave it to chance. Weird things can happen, and you really just don't know. So I like the Gold Coast Suns here. I think they win the game 15.5 points. I will lay that. We'll go over 177.5. GWS, very hit or miss for me. I don't know how great they are. They're a playoff team for sure, but can they play well enough to win at Gold Coast? I don't think so. Port Adelaide at Carlton. Carlton, -12.5, 172.5 is the total. I will say, Port Adelaide gave a really good effort last week against Frio. I thought they were going to beat him. They covered the spread. I was not expecting that. I expected them to give up, but they didn't. Some of their veterans really pulled the team together, and they played really hard, and they had a really good chance. Carlton just shows me nothing. They're another team, just listless, just nothing. Feeble Carlton. I will go with Port Adelaide plus the 12.5. They could win this match. 172.5 is the total. We'll go under in that one. Melbourne at Hawthorn. Hawthorn -22.5. 164.5 is the total. Hawthorn, a big win against banged up Collingwood last week, and they're pretty good at home. So I will take Hawthorn, lay the points. Melbourne Demons, oof, they're really, really bad. So we'll go under 164.5. Don't think they'll score very much. Collingwood, as we just talked about, off a really, really bad loss, but they are getting healthy. They're at the number one team in the ladder. That's the Adelaide Crows. The Crows lay 16.5 here on Saturday morning. 165.5 is the total. I'm going to go with Collingwood here, catching the points. I think that they bounce back. They start to get some bodies back, and they hang in this match, maybe even win it. We'll go under 165.5 and take the Magpies. Richmond at North Melbourne. North Melbourne -10.5, 167.5. Richmond's played well lately. They've covered some spreads for us lately. But I'm going to go with the Kangaroos here to get a big win. -10.5, we'll go under 167.5. I think this is a tight game. Richmond not quite as good on the road, so we'll go against them there. Geelong at Sydney. Sydney catching 18.5 at home. They have to have this game. This is their only chance they have of making finals, is they've got to win this game against Geelong. It's going to be tough, though. Geelong playing as good as anybody right now. We're going to go over 170.5. Geelong has just been pounding the ball through the uprights. They are scoring like 120, 130 a game over the last several matches, and they are hitting on all cylinders. Sydney, though, a team got off to that bad start, but we knew they were better than their record indicated, although we did fade them because their win total was way too high. So that was one of the future winners that we do have in the AFL, which we'll recap momentarily. But we're going to go with I'm going to lean towards the Swans with the 18.5 at home and go over 170.5. Then it's West Coast at Western. Western -74.5, 190.5 here. We're going to go under the 190.5. I don't think West Coast will be able to score a lot. Western will be very guarded here because they have to win this game. They have to win. I mean, they're going to win, but it's just a matter of they're going to be serious, though. They're not going to let West Coast hang around to where they can get upset. So I think the defense will be working on all cylinders early on. So those are the AFL plays. You can find them at BLS_PRP each and every week ahead of the actual schedule. Recapping some of the future bets that we have here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 winners in right now versus just 3 losses, although North Melbourne possibly could be. So we'll say 9-3 right now with a good chance that GWS makes us 10-3. So that's a really good year in the futures department for AFL football. All right, let's go to CFL football. Not been so good. Ottawa Renegades against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I'm going to take a shot with Ottawa +5.5 here. I don't love this by any means. Next game is the Edmonton Elks -3. You don't see that very often. Toronto is bad. They're horrid. I've watched them a couple of weeks now. They're terrible. 3 of the last 4 between these two have went over the total. So we're going with the Edmonton Elks in the over 53.5. Next game, Hamilton Tiger Cats. They have the best quarterback in the league statistically, but it doesn't matter. I'm going with Saskatchewan, who's laying 3.5 at home. 3 of the last 4 between these two have went over the total. And I like this game over too. 53.5 will go over the total in Hamilton and take Saskatchewan minus the points at home. And then Montreal, another team that struggled. Montreal, Winnipeg, and Toronto all very iffy. BC -4.5 at home. Last 2 between these two have stayed under the total. We'll go under 51.5. And I think BC wins this game in a defensive battle and covers the 4.5. All right. So we've talked about NFL preseason a little bit. Last week, I went to the school of thought that I was going to play pretty much every dog. So, again, I didn't post these on BLS_PRP because I wasn't sure I was going to work out. So I played a lot of the dogs, especially the ones I went against the line movements, which is very odd, something you normally wouldn't do. But when you're getting 2.5-point spreads that are going to 7, I just think it made sense to take the 7 in a lot of those situations, 6.5, 7, and you had a lot of outright winners. So if you played the dogs last week, you did very well. 12-4 dogs were last week in the preseason, 14-2 to the over, too. I will tell you this, an observation that I made, and I don't know if this will continue this week or in all while, and PSG just ties the game in stoppage time. Wow, 2-2, what a game. But one observation that I noticed, no teams were working on their running game. It was all passing. Everybody, knowing it's a passing league now, everybody was selling out for the pass. That was all they were worried about. Runs were mixed in very scarcely. It was, I thought there would be some teams who would try to really establish their O-line, especially the ones that played starters. It was not that case. It was all passing game. Every team that I watched, and I watched, I made an effort. Oh, this might be offside. I made an effort to watch more this preseason, and that was the observation that I had, is that these teams all were working on the passing game, no matter who the quarterbacks were. I mean, they were going all out in the passing game to try to execute and get as much chemistry as they could, and it worked out a lot. But man, there's a lot of bad wide receivers. There's a lot of bad defenses. Teams can't tackle and teams can't catch. So I bet I saw 25 wide open passes that were dropped by guys. And a lot of them were probably like middle range receivers, like guys who probably will make a team, but were like right on the cusp. And if they had a bad camp, they could get cut. So I was very surprised at how bad it was. And the NFL, like many leagues, they would be so much better off if they cut like 10 teams out of the league. It would be such a better product. Now the officials would still find a way to mess it up, but it would be a lot better product if there was a lot fewer teams and you could have more depth. There's just so many bad players, so many bad linemen. I will say the quarterback play was surprisingly, I'm not going to say good, but it wasn't as bad as I'd seen in past years, because it was evident that these OCs and head coaches were really trying to get chemistry in the passing game on nearly every game that I watched. So that's an observation going into week 2 of the preseason. If I like anything this week in preseason, I will post at BLS_PRP. I did not post any of those last week because I just didn't know what to expect. All right, bad beats. Nothing really in a bad beat, although we did have one bad beat in a board that we had. If you're familiar, you know, Super Bowl square type board on a game. It was a preseason game on Sunday, and Jim Harbaugh kicked the extra point to put somebody on the number at halftime, and there was a penalty, a defensive penalty, so it moved the ball like a yard closer. So they went for 2. So those are the kind of bad beats that still sting people. Yeah, you probably wouldn't have seen that in a regular season game, but yeah, nonetheless. Industry news and notes here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 139 here on the Watchdog Network from the Watchdog Pine Room Studios. Downtown Wheeling, it is follow-up time. High gambling, we talked about it last week. Mike DeWine wanted to get rid of player props. Well, gambling regulators, these guys actually made a sensible choice here. We'll see if it passes. They're drafting a rule to ban certain types of micro or flash betting, which includes MLB first pitches in other markets that could specifically be controlled by one player. I don't have a problem with that. If certain areas need to say, hey, we're not going to take a chance, I get that. But don't take everything out. So I think Ohio made a smart move. They kind of met in between. DeWine wanted to ban everything player prop wise. But these people, I can't believe I'm complimenting lawmakers, but they actually made a sensible choice here. So we'll see. Hopefully it passes that way and they can, go on and have some of that stuff, the dangerous stuff, moved out of there and keep the majority of the things. Bet Bash Las Vegas, that was going on this week. The Fair Bet Act was brought up there in a town hall format as Congressman Dina Titus of Nevada was there talking about the bill and how she's going to try to make that better for the taxable issues that came up with the big, beautiful bill, which isn't even in law yet. So don't listen to all your radio stations and all your news channels, because a lot of people are trying to tell you that stuff's taken effect already. It has not. So I will start next year, but still needs to be addressed for sure. Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer denies he ever made sports bets after someone screenshotted transaction descriptions from his Venmo account. Now, I can firsthand tell you, I've done Venmo. I'm sure most of you have. There's so many times where I'll read what someone sent me via money, whether they're exchanging, whether I owed them, they owed me. There's a lot of joking around going on in the descriptions of these things. If I had a dime for every time I saw somebody that I knew put hookers in below on the description for the Venmo transactions, I'd have probably enough money to at least buy a pizza. But it's very common for people to goof around here. So maybe Mateer is being honest. To me, this is a non-story. He didn't do anything that he was involved in. Give the kid a break. And again, people that are going out and screenshotting Venmo, I mean, jeez, that's just low as low can get. It's not like he was saying that now when he's playing in games. It's like when he was not even legal age to bet anyway. So I don't think there was any there. He may have had side bets with a buddy or something. Not legit. Not even a story. Now, what is a story is Shohei Ohtani is back in the news again. And I will tell you, I've had a bad feeling about this guy since the beginning. Something isn't adding up here. It reminds me of Yannick Sinner. It reminds me of Iga Swiatek. Something's not kosher about Shohei Ohtani's game. Not his game on the field, his game off the field. He might be the best baseball player ever, so I have to have that as a caveat. He might be. But this guy is in another weird situation. Now, we know the fall guy for the gambling situation was his interpreter. Well, now he's got this land deal that he apparently tanked in Hawaii and is now being sued. He's been named in a recent lawsuit along with his agent. The suit claims that he and his agent sabotaged a $240 million Hawaiian real estate project, and Ohtani used his fame and fortune in an attempt to strong arm the project leaders. The plaintiff stated that Ohtani's demands were totally unreasonable and that Ohtani and his agent abused their power and fame. I can totally see this being legit. And it doesn't sound like a good thing to me. And it makes me even more certain that this guy gambled. I think he thinks he's so elite that he can do whatever he wants and that someone else will be there to clean up the mess and fall on the sword for him. I don't like that he doesn't learn English. I don't like that he's made zero effort to address that gambling thing. And if he is this bad at choosing people to be around him, then that he's not very bright. So then that would be another concern. And if you're the Dodgers, you're giving a guy that's very dumb that kind of money and that kind of exposure, and then he's making your franchise look bad again. Again, innocent till proven guilty. I don't have enough facts to make a logical conclusion yet, but my gut and my ability to critical think says that something is there here, and I would be very surprised if these plaintiffs don't win this suit. Now, he's going to obviously get a high-powered attorney to fight this, but this is a suspicious action once again, and will the agent be the fall guy this time? That is the question. Pro golfer Max Homa says death threats and Venmo requests are very prevalent in modern-day world of sports betting. He's saying, you know, he misses a putt, falls out of a top 10, something costs a guy a better. He's getting Venmo requests for $1,900 because he cost a guy a bet. This is insane. If you do that to a guy, hopefully they let these athletes report them to Venmo. That person's never able to Venmo again. Brady Tkachuk of the Ottawa Senators, their captain, said he's had the same thing happen in situations. He's had to change his Venmo handle several times. This is wrong. Like, I am so into the camp where I don't feel sorry for these millionaire athletes to an extent, but you can't personally harass them. This is insane to me. If you do this, you deserve to be fined, you deserve to be jailed, you deserve to be banned from pretty much all apps. Matter of fact, you shouldn't even have to be able to have a phone. Every phone service in the world should get rid of you for doing silly things like this. So don't be one of those people. Don't be an a-hole. Don't harass athletes of any kind, amateur, semi-amateur, college athletes who are now pro athletes, whatever. Don't bother the people. I mean, there's enough things to get mad about, the referees and things that are sketchy on and off the field, the commissioners of these leagues that make you wonder, like, I don't know. But don't go after these. Now, I will say, if you find a guy like a Jaunte Porter, I'm not saying you should do anything to him, but if you wanted to have some choice words for him or something, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But it's just be polite. Be normal. For God's sakes, these people are humans, whether their bank accounts are giant or not. Large bet in the NFL this week, $55,000 on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl at plus 650. That would pay $357,000. Joe Burrow continues to be the leading MVP bet at all the different casinos and all the different sports books. He is the top bet getter, bet right. He's actually in handle and right, 2 to 3 times more handle and right on Joe Burrow to be MVP than there was a week ago, mostly because he played against nobody in a game that meant nothing, and Ja'Marr Chase made him look good, as usual. But that's neither here nor there. I don't understand it. If you want to burn your money on him, be my guest. But you didn't hear that on this show. BetMGM says that the Chiefs-Packers or Chiefs-49ers would be a great matchups for them in the Super Bowl. Very low handle on those teams so far. And they also said that the Ravens would be a good result. If Ravens get there, whoever the Ravens would play, it's a good result. Not a lot of money on Baltimore. A lot of people, probably like me, just don't think Lamar can ever win a big game, as much as that makes me sad. College football, Clemson opened 20-1 to win the national title. They're down to 9-1, so sharp money on Clemson. PSG, a bad miss and penalties. This goes right to penalties because they don't want to waste these guys' legs. Phillies, Mets, Tigers, and Yankees continue to represent the majority of bets and handle for to win the World Series. Now, the Phillies, I can understand, but the Mets, Tigers, and Yankees right now are not in a good spot. The Indians have gained 10 games on the Tigers over the last 3 weeks. That's pretty impressive. Yankees are a mess. The Mets are a mess. Phillies, I can see. If you're going to bet the Phillies, I can't argue with you there. All right, before we get to football, we got a little bit of racing to talk about. We only have one race, so won't be a ton on that. Recapping the IndyCar race at Portland last week. It was Will Power getting it done for us at 7-1. So you got to like that. We'll take the winner and got us into the positive last week. Thank goodness. Cookout 400 at Richmond. But first, let's talk about last week's SVG performance. He gets the job done at Watkins Glen. We had Chris Bell. He ran very, very well. We had Daniel Suarez in the top 10. We had Ross Chastain in the top 10, so not bad. But we're to Richmond now. This is a night race on Saturday night, so let's keep that in mind. You got some really good drivers here. You got Denny Hamlin, the favorite. He's 3.5-1. That is way too short of a price. Austin Dillon actually won this race last year. He only led 35 laps, but got the strategy that he needed to get himself a victory and get himself into the playoff. Denny Hamlin won this 2 years ago. This is one of his home tracks. He is from Virginia, so he is always very formidable here. A couple of years ago, Martin Truex had one of the most locked-in cars you ever see. He led 228 laps. Also, Kyle Larson has had some success leading laps here in the past. He's led 122 last year and 144 the year before that. He is the second choice, and I'm sorry, third choice at 9-1. Chris Bell, the second choice at 4-1. William Byron also at 9-1. So Richmond's a very, very driver's track. So you got Chris Bell, the best average finish ever at Richmond. He's ran 9 races. He's got 9 top 20s, which shouldn't be very hard for his caliber. His car alone should get him there. 7 top 10s, 4 top 5s. That's really impressive. Followed by Kyle Busch, who's had a ton of starts here, 38. He's got 6 wins, 19 top 5s. He's been all right lately, but I don't know. Can't go there. 36 starts for Denny Hamlin. He's got 5 wins, 20 top 5s. Then you get down to a guy like Josh Berry. Started here 3 times. A top 5 and a top 10. So I think he could be live. He's going to be a guy I'm going to be looking at a decent price of around 30-1. Joey Logano has been very good here before. He's got 2 wins, 14 top 5s. You can find Logano around 10 or 11-1. Brad Keselowski has to have this race. This is really, he's got 2 weeks left and 2 tracks he could win at. He's won at Richmond before twice, and then he's got Daytona next week. He's got to win one of those again in the playoffs. Keselowski will be all out here. I'll be on him at around 19-1. Alex Bowman, he's won here before. He's 40-1. He's been racing very well over the last few weeks, road courses and ovals. Alex Bowman's been solid, so we'll go with Bowman. Chris Buescher, third last week, starting to get his momentum together. He's around 30-1. We'll take a shot with him. Hamlin and Bell, just too short of prices. I can see them both contending. Ross Chastain, another guy that I like. I think he's a serious contender to hang in here. And he's had 12 starts here. He's got 3 top 10s and 2 top 5s. So solid work out of Ross Chastain at 25-1. Chase Briscoe, I'm curious to see if they could get the car that Martin Truex had set up his team. Chase Briscoe is in that car now. Truex has had some really incredible runs here at Richmond. Could Briscoe get it done here at 15-1? I don't know. I got a question by him. I'm not sure I'm going to pull the trigger. It's a little low of a price, but we'll take a shot. And Daniel Suarez is our biggest long shot of the week. He's 125-1. The guy ran very well last week. This is another driver's track. He's run very well at Richmond. And if you like Richmond, you're going to run well at Richmond. If you don't like it, you'll probably never run well there. Suarez likes it. A lot of what used to be when he would shift a lot, when they had a manual shifts. It was really, really good for a guy like Suarez, who's a great shifter. But with the tap shifting now, maybe not as big an advantage. He's still very good, though. So Daniel Suarez, we will be using here at Richmond. So Ross Chastain, Chase Briscoe, Alex Bowman, Joey Logano, Chris Buescher, Brad Keselowski, Josh Berry, and Daniel Suarez for the Cookout 400 at Richmond on Saturday night. All right, Bettors Last Stand, show number 139. here from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios. Let's talk some football. It's what everybody wants to get to here. American tackle football. And we started off in the Big Ten. You hear a lot of Big Ten talk out here on this network each and every week, whether it's the Sports Huddle, whether it's our guys, whether it's Shane and Bob and Bear, or even Shane and Bob talking about Ohio State and the Big Ten, and you hear a lot of it here on the Watchdog Network. Don't forget, Watchdog Network, your home for high school football. John Marshall, Wheeling Park, and Central live right here on the Watchdog Network. You're going to want to have watchdognetwork.com bookmarked on every device that you have, or saved, or tabbed, or however you want to do it on your home screen of your iPhone. Get it there, watchdognetwork.com. We also got WVU football right here on the Watchdog Network. All right. Let's go. It's the Big Ten. Started off with Ohio State. Ohio State, a team that really needs no introduction. They win the national championship last year. They have several guys gone, but they also have two probably top 10, 15 players for NFL draft purposes. And Caleb Downs, the safety, and Jeremiah Smith, the wide receiver. Two new coordinators, though. Brian Hartline takes over the offense. Matt Patricia, yeah, that Matt Patricia, Mr. Pencil from the Belichick defensive coordinator days for New England. He will be leading the defense. Julian Sain looks like he will be the starter at quarterback. Of course, my cousin Nate plays on this team, and hopefully he's going to have a serious role in the offense. I'm sure he will at some point, just being a freshman, but I imagine he's going to have some packages where he will get some experience early on. I think this should be a good team, and talking to Nate a few weeks ago, he was very impressed with Julian Sands' command of the huddle and that leadership-type quality that he had, but he felt like either quarterback that they choose would be good, but he really was impressed with Julian quite a bit. Defense. Their DC goes to Penn State, so you don't know what to think. I don't know. Matt Patricia, he's really not been as great as he once looked, but we shall see. Two of their toughest three games are at home. They get Texas at home. They get Penn State at home. They do got to go to Michigan at the end of the year, which has been a house of horrors for them. It actually wasn't even any better at home. So I feel like the Buckeyes win 10 games here minimum. They've got Grambling, Ohio, Washington. I mean, these are games they're going to win. They're going to beat Minnesota at home. At Illinois, I'm not an Illinois guy, as you'll hear about later. At Wisconsin, doesn't scare you at all. Purdue's going to be awful. UCLA stinks. Rutgers stink. I mean, very, very manageable schedule. They really only have three possible games that they could lose outside of Illinois or Wisconsin. I don't know how good those teams will be. And PSG comes all the way back from 2-0, down 2-0 very late to win the UEFA Super Cup. Next team to talk about is my pick to win this league. It'll be Penn State, plus 230. I think Penn State is a team that, if it's not this year, it'll never be. James Franklin, one of the worst big game coaches ever, but I feel like he's got such a good team here. He really is going to have to mess this up for them not to make the Big Ten championship and make the playoff. Obviously, I don't see how they don't do that. And this is a team that's actually better than their team last year. Remember, we were very high on them in the playoff, and they almost got to the final. Just some late game shenanigans cost them in the semifinal game. But Penn State, a very good showing last year, and they're even better this year. Now, I know they lose Abdul Carter. I mean, that's a big loss, but this defense is like an NFL caliber defense. It's got a lot back, and I really do think Penn State should be 7-0 going into Ohio State. I do. I think they'll be 7-0, and Ohio State will probably be 1-2-3. Yeah, they're probably going to be about 7-0 too. So good chance there's a clash of unbeatens there on November 1st. But like I said, if it's not their year, it'll never be. They got loads of talent. They're 34-2 as a favorite over the last 3 years. 27-0 when favored by six or more. But they're 0-6 as an underdog, so that's a problem. Katron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, these are the two best running backs in the country. That is the best backfield. These are NFL-type backs. I have not seen a college backfield this good, in my opinion, since Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams. And say what you want about their pro careers, they were incredibly good in college, and these two dudes are incredibly good. I think they are going to really have massive years. Drew Aller's back, a quarterback. A lot of people down on him, but his wide receivers last year stunk. He had a great tight end in Tyler Warren. He will have to replace that. But they brought in a lot of wide receivers from better teams, and I think that will help them quite a bit. Again, the defense should be awesome. 7-0 going into Ohio State, very, very likely. I think this team wins 11 games. I am going over 10.5. That seems way too easy to me. I really don't think that there is a losable game other than Ohio State on this team's schedule. They don't have to play Michigan. They don't play USC or Illinois. Not that I'm that worried about either one of those teams, but they're considered to be pretty good teams. So Penn State over all the way, and Penn State Nittany Lions to win the league. Yeah, I mean, it's there's a Ohio State to lose, no question about it. Penn State with a little bit more chemistry and veterans coming back than Ohio State. Oregon, the next team. I'm not real high on the Ducks. They're going to be a team that I don't know about Dane Lanning. I think he's a good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach, but they lost a lot on offense. They literally have to replace 10 of their 11 starters, including their quarterback. So that's a problem. Just five guys back on their defense that played 100 or more snaps last year. That isn't good. Lots of transfers. Dante Moore expected to take over for Dylan Gabriel. He's a sophomore. Don't know much about him, but he looks like he's going to have some growing pains. They got tons of new players. They got trips to Penn State, Iowa, and Washington. They don't play Ohio State or Michigan, so that has to help. But I'm going under 10.5 here for the Oregon Ducks. I'm not even trying to hate on this team, but how is their win total 10.5? It just surprises me. It's a really high win total for a team that's replacing a lot. I don't see them being a contender here in the Big Ten whatsoever. Next team, Michigan Wolverines. Everybody in Ohio State can't stand this team. Quarterback battle between Bryce Underwood, the highly touted newcomer, and then Mikey Wood out of Fresno State. They got Justice Haynes from Alabama. They got Donovan McCauley from Indiana to help their offensive skill positions a little bit. Secondary should be really good. I think if the offense improves, I think they could be all right. But I lean to the under here. No real play. I think they win between 7 and 9 games. I lean under 9.5 for Michigan. Illinois, the next team we'll talk about. Illinois, a 43-1 to win the league. Ohio State, by the way, plus 195 to win the league. Penn State, plus 230. Oregon plus 330, Michigan 10-1. Illinois, boy, we're getting a lot of hype for Brett Bielema's team. I don't like it. Their entire secondary does return. They got a really good pass rusher in Gabe Jackis. Luke Altmaier's back at quarterback. Not sure about him. They had a lot of good fortune last year. I don't like this team at all. I'm under 8 wins for the Illini. I don't think they're awful, but I think they win probably like 6 or 7 games. I think they're going to regress quite a bit. Another team that will regress as well is the Indiana Hoosiers, 46-1 to win it all. To win this league, exactly. It would be a lot more than 46-1, like 146-1 to win it all. They return just 8 combined starters on each side of the ball. Fernando Mendoza from Cal comes in, but I don't really know how great of a quarterback he is. He's just okay. A lot of question marks for them. Should win around 7. I don't think they'll be terrible. They got trips to Penn State, Oregon, and Maryland, but they don't play Ohio State, Michigan, or USC. So lean of the under 8.5 for the Indiana Hoosiers. Nebraska Cornhuskers, Matt Rhule. They got Dylan Raiola as the quarterback. The Pat Mahomes look-alike. They lost their entire front 6 of the defense, which could be a problem. Schedule isn't easy. They don't have Ohio State at least. Trips to Maryland, Minnesota, Penn State. That's not going to be easy either. I lean under 7.5, but it's just too much of a question mark for the Nebraska Cornhuskers at this point. USC Trojans, as we continue on here, Better's Last Stand, talking Big Ten football as we wind it down. USC Trojans, Jordan Maiva, the quarterback, is back. I got questions about him. Not sure how good he's going to be. Lincoln Riley's job is on the line. That is going to be a serious, serious point of contention, as they are 20-1 to win this league, and I don't see him being able to contend at all. I think they win around 7, but I lean over 7.5. I slightly like them over the 7.5. I think they could get to 8 or 9. They got trips to Illinois and Notre Dame, as well as Oregon, which I think Oregon and Illinois are beatable. Notre Dame is probably not going to be a good game for them. So I lean to the over for this team. I don't love them, but I don't hate them either. Iowa, Kirk Ferentz just keeps on going. I don't know how this guy continues to have a job. He never really does much either. He's got 3 back on the offensive line, which is where every foundation of Iowa football begins. The quarterback is Mark Gronowski from South Dakota State. Defense returns only 4 starters. That could be an issue. Moderately hard schedule, though. They got no Ohio State or Michigan, but they got trips to Iowa State, which is the non-conference, Rutgers, USC, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. All those are tough games for Iowa, if you ask me. They do get Penn State, Minnesota, and Oregon at home, but I think they could definitely still lose 2 out of those 3. I like under 7.5 wins for Iowa. I am not on the Iowa bandwagon. A lot of people giving out Iowa to be a potential dark horse to win this league. I see no chance of that happening, but I've been wrong many times before. Minnesota Golden Gophers, P.J. Fleck, his 9th year. It seems like he's been there like 99 years. Redshirt freshman quarterback Drake Lindsey, 6'5". He takes over the offense. Expected to be a lot better this year. They got running back A.J. Turner coming in from Marshall, where he averaged 8.2 yards per carry. That's good. Defense is always good for Minnesota. Their schedule seems manageable to me, although Buffalo, a tricky first game. Buffalo could be a pretty good team. They got trips to Iowa and Ohio State, which are not going to be easy. They got Oregon, but The rest is not bad, and I like them over 6.5 wins. I think they win at least 8 games for the Golden Gophers. Washington, the next team, Jed Fish. This is his second year. 6-7 last year. Damon Williams is the quarterback. He went 0-2 in his final 2 starts of the year last year. He started the final 2 games. Didn't bode well for him. Tons of transfers. Fitch has had some success in the second year. So Jed Fish has shown in the second year he can kind of make a team jump up. Hard to go over 7.5. I lean under 7.5 for the Washington Huskies. Rutgers Scarlet Knights, Greg Schiano, 17th year. This is sixth of his second stint. 94-101 all time. Decent program, can never get an offense, though. Quarterback and 4 of his 5 starters were back on the offensive line. I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess the line part is, but the quarterback, yeah. They do bring in a couple of good wide receivers. Defensive secondary is expected to be really, really good. And they got some transfers on the D-line that Shiano is very high on, and he's a very good defensive coach. I think they should have a top 20, top 30 type defense. Maybe the hardest schedule, though, in the Big Ten. I really was going to be on Rutgers over, but after I looked at the schedule a few times, trips to Minnesota, Washington, Illinois, Ohio State, and they got Iowa and Penn State at home. I would be of a slight lean still to the over, but man, this is a really hard schedule for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Wisconsin, Luke Fickell, I don't know. Defense returns just 2 starters. They got 8 new transfers coming in. Billy Edwards is in to play quarterback from Maryland. Not sure that's going to be much of an upgrade. They do get Jaden Ballard from Ohio State, the wide receiver, transferring in. Secondary is expected to be very good for the Badgers. They get a tough schedule with trips to Bama, Michigan, Oregon, and Minnesota. I lean under 5.5, but no official play on the Badgers. UCLA, Deshaun Foster. This team impressed me a little bit last year, not because of their talent or because they were very good, but they played really hard, and they never quit, and that's a good sign for Deshaun Foster. If he can get some better players in here, I think UCLA could be a little bit better. So, like I said, they played well down the stretch. They gave Penn State a really good game late in the year and appear to have a completely new roster, though. So they get the transfer in from Tennessee, the Nico Iamaleva from Tennessee after the NIL dispute with the Vols. They got 10 new defensive backs coming in on defense. It's pretty interesting. Tough games, though. Utah, Penn State, Ohio State won't be easy, but I think they get over 5.5. So we'll go over 5.5 for the Bruins. Maryland, Mike Locksley said he lost his team last year after NIL and transfer portal money situations cost him team chemistry. His team kind of quit. They had little cliques. One side was all supporting one set of guys, another supported the other side of guys. So it really tore apart the team. And Locksley admitted that, and he's going to try to solve it. Can he? I don't know. Let's see. Quarterback, blue chip quarterback Malik Washington is expected to be the starter. How long will it take him to get going? I don't know. Their schedule seems favorable, and they have talent. They have a lot better talent than what their record showed last year. So I think Maryland could be a little bit better. I'm going to go over 4.5 for the Terrapins. I think they are going to be a team that's going to improve. Michigan State, Jonathan Smith, the former Oregon State coach. This is his second year. Aiden Childs comes in, and this is a guy that's very good with his feet. Can he throw a little bit? I don't know. The offense scored just 17 points or more just one time in their last 5 games, so not pretty there. Smith has done well in his second year, similar to Jed Fish, so maybe I don't know about their dynamic talent that they have coming in. Their defense should be pretty good, so it might keep them in some games. Most of their better matchups come on the road, which could be a problem. Michigan and Penn State at home, which won't be easy at all. They don't play Illinois or Ohio State, so that is good. I lean under 5.5 for Michigan State. Northwestern, and they come in with probably not a pick to be very good. So SMU's Preston Stone takes over at quarterback. The defense should be good again. The defense is always seemingly decent for Northwestern each and every year. Likely to win about 3 games, so I have no real play. Maybe 4 gets them over the 3.5, but I got a pass on that. And then Purdue. Barry Odom comes in from UNLV. He has 50 transfers leaving the program. He has more than 50 coming in, including some key offensive positions and some guys that came with him from UNLV, including some linemen. Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan all on their schedule. That is not good. They might win 4, but it's going to take a lot. No play on the Boilermakers. So, once again, Penn State, my top play there. I'll have all the win totals and the bets that I like on BLS_PRP, so be sure and check those out. And then finally here on Better's Last Stand, we'll go through the Eastern divisions of the NFL. We'll start in the NFC today. And I didn't really have a lot that I liked in this in these, either one of these divisions, a little bit of an opinion, but the NFC East is going to be tricky. You got Washington on the ascent. You got Philly kind of plateauing. They have alignments hurt now that it's still not going to matter. They're so deep and well-structured. So Philadelphia is going to be the team to beat. You got Dallas with a potentially scary offense. You got the Giants with a great defense. So that's all the things you got to try to weigh in here. I think Philadelphia probably wins around 10 games. I would go under 11.5, though, with them, as they have a very, very tough schedule. Dallas, KC, Rams, Tampa to start. Denver, who I'm not a believer in. Then they get Denver, Giants, Minnesota, Giants again. Then at Green Bay, Detroit at Dallas, Chicago at the Chargers, Vegas at home, at Washington, at Buffalo, and then Washington again. So that is not an easy schedule by any means. So we'll go under the 11.5 with Philly, but I still do think they win 10.5 or win 10 or 11. They're not going to win 10.5 games. 10 or 11. They'll be right around that number, but I can't play it over. New York Giants. I think this defense is going to be really good. They got Abdul Carter. They got Thibodeau. They got a good secondary. Will their offense be anything? Russell Wilson, I don't think he'll be terrible. I think he'll manage the ball pretty well. Malik Nabers, I think, is going to have a massive year. I'm going over 7.5 touchdowns for him. He didn't have a receiver like this for the Steelers. Malik Nabers is so much better than George Pickens, being Russell Wilson, that is. I think he's going to have an incredible year. He was really good last year as a rookie. So we're going Nabers over 7.5 touchdowns. We're going to go over 1,150 receiving yards for Malik Nabers. I think he is as good as it gets for the young group of receivers. I lean over 5.5 here with the Giants. Their schedule's manageable. I think that defense is going to keep them in games. I don't love this team. I'm not sure about Brian Daboll. I'm not sure about Jackson Dart. To me, didn't look great the other day in the preseason. But something tells me the Giants with that defense are going to be in a lot more games, and especially in the division where they'll know the opponents pretty well. Dallas, always a train wreck. Micah Parsons, they got to get him in there. This is all over for them. Offensively, I think they're going to be loaded, and I think Prescott could have, 4,800 yards of passing. I mean, he could be that good if he stays healthy. I do like them over the 8.5. I was looking for some Jaden Blue numbers, the running back, for some receiving and some other things. I can't find him anywhere, so I'm going to keep hunting around for those. I may add that later, but I think he's going to be an important part of that offense. I like the over 8.5 here for Dallas, but that's got to be if Michael Parsons comes back. If not, it could be a big problem. Washington Commanders, this is a team. They got to get Terry McLaurin back. They get Debo Samuel. They got a good offense. Everything's turning in the right direction for them. They got a new owner. Everything is going well, except for now this holdout for McLaurin. Defense is getting better. Dan Quinn's a good defensive coach. I think this team wins right around 9 or 10 games. I'm going to pass on anything official because I don't love anything here with them. But I think they're going to be good. Can they win this division? I don't know. I don't know who I'm going to pick in this division. I'm leaning towards picking Dallas, if you can believe that. Washington, I feel like, will have a small regression. Philly, same. So maybe Dallas can swoop in and win this with 10 wins and just have some division tiebreaker. So lean to Dallas to win the division, but no real strong pick there. Switching over to the AFC East. Now you start off with the New York Jets. Jets win total 5.5. 100-1 to win the AFC, 18-1 to win the East. This team is going to be awful. We're going under 6 wins. I did find a flat 6 out there, so if you can find that, or 6.5, even better, go under it. Matter of fact, I'd probably play him under 5.5, too. I do like Breece Hall's receiving yards over, 350.5. I do like that. I think he'll be a dump-off target of Justin Fields, because Justin Fields just, face it, he's not going to throw the ball down the field. You saw him do it last year in Pittsburgh at the Bears. He's going to just keep dumping it short because he's not going to be able to go through his progressions enough. He's either going to run or he's going to dump it to a back. And Breece Hall will be that guy. I like over 350.5 yards, like under 6.5 wins. Fields can't play. He's just not an NFL quarterback. Anthony Richards is not an NFL quarterback. We can go on and on and on with these guys with their great athletes with the big arms, cannot play quarterback, and Justin Fields is one of them. So under on the Jets as a team, but over on Breece Hall receiving yards. Next team, Buffalo Bills. Everybody picked the Buffalo Bills. In the VSiN magazine I read, 26 out of 26 people picked them to win this division. I can't go against it. They're minus 260 for a reason. They got the best quarterback in the league with Josh Allen, at least as far as what he means to his team. I'd still take Mahomes in the bigger game. But as far as MVP, what it means to my team if I'm not there. The Bills are like a 3-win team without Josh Allen. He's as good as it gets. He could be an MVP again this year. I think their schedule is very easy. I like them over 11.5, so I don't see any reason why they won't win this division barring a Josh Allen injury. Is their offense good enough? James Cook signed a contract. I'm not a James Cook guy. I think he's very overrated. I think he's a plug-and-play guy. There could be 10 other backs just as good as him. Wide receiver is a concern every year for Buffalo. I don't think they have the horses once again this year. So that's a problem. And they're two tight ends. They just, like Kincaid, how many years are going to hear about Knox and Kincaid? Two-headed monster. Those guys are both just average. They're not athletic. They're like Herman Munster running routes out there. I'm not impressed with either one of them. But Josh Allen makes all these players relevant, and he keeps the Bills in every single game. So we'll go over 11.5 in the Bills to win the East Division. Next team, the New England Patriots. New England, Mike Vrabel comes in. They got a really good defense, and their offense looked pretty good. I am very high on Drake May, as you know. I can't believe I'm saying that because I did not like him out of the draft. Done a complete reversal on this guy. He impressed me last year with his toughness. I think he can be very good. I love him over 2.5 rushing touchdowns. We gave that out months ago on here. I think that's an absolute lock, stock, and barrel winner, assuming he doesn't get hurt. I think they'll win right around 8 games. Not prepared to go over the 8.5, but if I had to go one way, I would probably go over 8.5, but I don't love it. I think New England's going to be a very competitive team. There's going to be some weeks they're going to look very good, some other weeks they're going to look a little iffy, but that's kind of what happens with a young team. But Mike Vrabel knows how to navigate that, and I think they'll be a relevant team knocking on the door of a playoff spot. A team that probably won't be is the Miami Dolphins. Mike McDaniel, this guy, if the Bengals head coach, why can't I think of his name right now? Well, I guess he's that irrelevant for me, but Zach Taylor. If Taylor doesn't get fired first, it will be Mike McDaniel. This team going nowhere. Tyreek Hill's mouthing off again. Tua's ready to run him out of there. I think Tua's still a decent player. He gets hurt a lot, but when he's out there, like, their offense puts up points. It's their defense that stinks, and they don't know how to win big games, and that's a problem. But that starts at the very top with Mike McDaniel. No play on them. 8.5, too high. I would go under, but a lot of sharp guys on this team somehow. So if you can keep Tua upright, no reason why they couldn't win 9. Because you're getting, you know, got the Jets in that division. It could be beatable. New England's not, I think they're going to be better, but a manageable schedule. They're going to get Indianapolis. When you start seeing Indianapolis, the Falcons and the Saints on your schedule, the Jets 2 times, I mean, that's got to make you feel like you'll win 6 or 7 at least, and maybe they could get to 9, but no real play on the Dolphins. I think they could be in a bit of trouble this year. But that's the rundown of the AFC and NFC Eastern Divisions. Again, BLS_PRP will have all the picks for you each and every week here on the show. Everything we give out before and after the show, it will be at BLS_PRP. So be sure and follow us there. Follow us at the Pine Room Studios on our YouTube page, on all of our social media at the Pine Room Studios, at WatchdogNetwork.com. Get on over there and get ready for that. High school football, college football, pro football talk, all right here on the Watchdog Network. That's going to do it for us here on show number 139. We'll be back next week to talk about, what divisions are we doing in the NFL next week? I guess it's the final divisions. We've done everything. So it's the AFC and NFC North. We'll talk Steelers, we'll talk Ravens, and we'll talk that daunting NFC North division next week here on the show. College football, wild picks for week 0. I gave some of those out already, so we'll recap those, some of the early picks that we gave out for week 0 and early week 1 action. So check out BLS_PRP. We'll recap those again next week. We'll add some soccer plays to the portfolio, and get you ready for the NFL and maybe even some fantasy talk here in the next couple of weeks as you get ready for your fantasy draft. Again, follow us, BLS_PRP. Give us a call on the Pine Room Watchdog Radio Show each and every Tuesday and Friday. We got Football Friday starting up here soon. So if you want something you want to hear us talk about or break down more, please feel free to reach out. Let us know what you're thinking. All right, till next week. It's Matt saying so long for the Pine Room Watchdog Studios here on the Watchdog Network. Have a wonderful weekend. Best of luck in your wagering, and we'll see you next week here on Better's Last Stand right here on the Watchdog Network.